Hey everyone, I'm Jason V, and this is Local Color, a Baltimore podcast, putting the spotlight on Baltimore's culture creators. My guest today is reporter Kenneth Burns. Kenneth reports on Baltimore City and Baltimore County for 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. Today we'll talk about his career and what it's like to report in the current news climate. Kenneth, welcome to Local Color.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Obviously, it's been a very busy year. It's probably the busiest of my professional career with everything that's happening in Baltimore. I'm also keeping in mind that where we are now with, and I know we're going to get into it with Freddie Gray and what we've seen this year, we're literally looking at history being made.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we will get to Freddie Gray, but I want to begin with you. Where are you from?
I'm actually from Prince George's County, born in D.C., raised in Prince George's County, graduated from High Point High School, and one of the many people who moved here recently and felt left out of the whole City Poly football game that happened recently.
Yeah, I saw that on, I think it was on Twitter. Was it Poly that beat City? Like, somebody beat somebody bad.
Somebody beat somebody, and because I have friends from both, I just tried to stay neutral.
Yeah, you tried to remain objective. You're like, well, it's just a game. It's just a game. But to them, it's a pretty serious rivalry. It's been going on for a good bit now, hasn't it?
It has, decades.
So where did you go to college?
This is where the story begins. Okay. I started off at Prince George's Community College. Probably could have got into a regular college or university, but I chickened out of taking the SAT. For anybody who's listening, I would urge them to take the SAT because any score is better than no score if you have dreams and aspirations and that sort of thing as far as higher education. But I started there. And then I also started around the same time at WTLP Radio. I was an intern. And I used to write a column for DCR-TV. And the program director, a man by the name of Jim Farley, he read this column and found out I was graduating from high school and offered me an internship, asked me if I was going to college locally. And I said, I don't really care about the academic credit at this point. I just want the experience. And so that was a blessing to get an internship at a major market all-news radio station and didn't even set foot on a college campus yet.
D.C.'s it's not an easy market to break into.
It really isn't, especially now in recent years. You've really seen D.C. kind of move up and down, but they're still a top 10 market. And so after being an intern for a month, I've wound up being hired as a freelancer and worked up the chain as a part-timer. Also along the way, I wound up dropping out of Prince George's Community College because I ran out of money. After a while, I left WTOP. And keep in mind, being 18 at a major market, 18, 19, 20 at a major market radio station, it was a miracle I was not shown the door before 4 years came around.
Do you think it's because they didn't want to take the time to train you, or you just thought that, or do you think you're just too young?
I think it was a combination of being too young and then getting a big head. And I was talking to a friend last week about this. I really thought it was hot stuff. I literally said, no more. I don't have to work in retail. I don't have to do any of these crap jobs, so to speak. I'm in radio. And I realized that doesn't matter because I didn't have an education or any real experience. And I wound up doing those quote-unquote crap jobs. I was, before I wound up going to broadcasting full-time in, I want to say, 2006, I worked as a cashier at Giant. I went back to a job I had in high school selling used computers. I worked at Walmart, starting off in the toy department, then became a cashier. And it was around the time I worked at Walmart where I met somebody who worked for WNAV in Annapolis. He worked part-time at WTOP. And he asked me if I was interested in doing on-air stuff. I said, absolutely. And so began how long was that? I want to say about a 9-year association with WNAV in Annapolis. Most of that was part-time. And then the last 2 years I worked there was in a full-time capacity. I was an anchor and reporter. Now, remember what I said about thinking I was hot stuff? Years after that, I've somehow jumped on the humble train. And it is a humbling experience to realize you're not as hot as you thought you were. So I was a traffic reporter for what was then Traffic Pulse, which became traffic.com, and then ultimately got sold to Navtech and then Nokia and then God knows what Nokia did with it. I lost track. I worked as a producer for the Radio America Network, this conservative news talk network. I worked part-time at WAVA in Washington as a producer, and that became full-time. Oh, and that's the other thing you should probably keep in mind. Recessions are not your best friend.
I think everyone got a very very clear education on what recessions can do to your professional career.
In my case, my full-time became my part-time and then non-existent. And my part-time became my full-time job, and I took a nice, noticeable pay cut in the process.
Ooh, yeah, nobody likes that.
So fast forward to around 2009, I was wrapping up my associate's degree at Anne Arundel Community College. Oh, I forgot. I transferred my credits to Anne Arundel Community College and graduated with an associate's in general studies. Also that year, I moved to Baltimore because I was accepted to Towson University. Political science major, I'll be graduating with my undergrad next month. And then I'm taking a breather before I start grad school.
Oh, you're going to go to grad school.
Yes. Okay. I already reconciled the fact that I will be learning something or taking a class for the rest of my life.
I think that's great because you stuck with it, one, and two, you realize that learning is – every single parent that is hearing this is going to laugh, but you realize that knowledge is power.
It is. Even if you're on the 16-year undergraduate program like I have been –
there's nothing wrong with that, man.
Well, I'm glad you said that. I realize that there's nothing wrong with it now because for a long time I just felt that I was behind. I was behind the curve. I was behind everybody else. And in fact, at one point, I didn't even want to go to my graduation ceremony at Anne Arundel. And it's definitely nothing against the school. Anne Arundel Community College is a great junior college. It was just the shame of I didn't get this done by my mid-20s. I'm 28, 29 years old, and I'm walking the stage with what I affectionately call my half piece of paper. But I love that half piece of paper.
When did you know that you wanted to work in news?
Well, depending on who you ask, I came out of a reporter. My mom would tell you a story. In addition to Sesame Street, I would watch the McNair Lehrer News Hour. Now, for the millennials listening to this podcast, the McNair Lehrer News Hour is now the PBS News Hour. It started off as Jim Lehrer and Robert McNeil. They pretty much set the standard for a daily newscast in public television. So I would watch that, and then I would watch news growing up locally in D.C. Channel 9, Gordon Peterson, he's since retired from Channel 7. Jim Vance is still around, thank God. Paul Berry on Channel 7. My grandfather, God rest his soul, watched Paul Berry on Channel 7. I actually had a chance to work with Paul Berry when I was at Radio America. He hosted a consumer finance show.
How was that?
He was a really nice guy. And the first thing I said, I hope I don't embarrass you when I say this, but I grew up watching you. He said, oh, no, I'm not embarrassed at all.
I'm sure he was probably flattered.
He genuinely was. And I would see him from time to time. When I did my second tour at Radio America, it was more of a part-time capacity. And he would stop in every now and then. To pick up the rest of the journey, got picked up full-time at WNAV. And Annapolis is definitely not D.C., so I needed a second job. And I was blessed enough to get hired at WBAL Radio. I was a weekend news anchor for a year before I joined WYPR. Had some amazing experiences for WBAL. Did some reporting for them in the field. In fact, election 2012, I was working for three stations at that point. A full-time, a part-time, and then a freelance gig, WGMD on the Delmarva Peninsula, Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. And I was reporting for those three stations election night. I was based down here at M&T Bank Stadium where the Democrats and Senator Ben Cardin had their victory party. So I was reporting for WNAV as far as how the Democrats were celebrating. WBAL, once again, the Democratic angle, and then just general Maryland stuff because WGMD, they focus on Maryland, but they also focus a great deal on Delaware because that's where they're licensed to.
Let's jump to the present day. You're a reporter at WYPR. As you mentioned when we first started, we're watching history being made with the case against the six police officers charged in the death of Freddie Gray. State's attorney Marilyn Mosby has her work cut out for her. Tell me, as a black man reporting on these issues like police brutality and Black Lives Matter and such. How does that stuff make you feel?
It makes me concerned. Saw a video on Facebook yesterday that pretty much sums up where we are in society. Police officer bumps into a Black woman and a police officer says, "Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see you." And both sides are apologizing. Then you have the Black Lives Matter protesters show up with the Blue Lives Matter protesters showing up. They start screaming at each other. The woman and the cop, they just kind of got out of there.
the cop escorted the woman out as the two sides were arguing.
Right. Oh, wait, it gets better. At the end, they showed a clip of CNN reporting the cop being overly mean, telling people to shut the F up. You have the Fox angle showing that the woman was being the aggressor.
Oh, I got to check out this video. You said you saw it on Facebook?
I saw it on Facebook.
Okay.
All of that to say, it is a very concerning time because you have these issues. You've always had these issues. You have this systematic racism that hasn't really been dealt with. Not because people don't want to try. They are afraid to try to address it. I completely understand both sides. I mean, police officers, they're trying to keep their job is to hold authority.
Right. Their job, if you want to say it, is to protect and serve.
Right. To protect and serve. And you can't really do that unless you have the backing of your supervisors and the power vested in you by the state. But at the same time, you have these cases. And even before Freddie Gray, you have Sandra Bland. Well, altogether, to current time, you have Sandra Bland. You have Eric Garner. You have Michael Brown in Missouri. You have, and even before that, when I was in high school, Amadou Diallo, Patrick Dorismond, you have these cases where there are questionable circumstances. And you also have laws that are being challenged because, let's say, for example, the Maryland law that guides the disciplinary process for the cop, the Law Enforcement Officer's Bill of Rights. A good chunk of that deals with the internal issues that a police officer would go through. But the law happens to guide the process for cases like Freddie Gray or Tyrone West here in Baltimore. And no one has really kept up like everything else that has passed through our legislature. The law is slow to catch up. And now we've seen what happened with the consequences of laws not being caught up, as well as grievances not being addressed. Think about this. Baltimore has a Black power structure. Our mayor is Black. Up until the summer, our police chief was Black. Our city council president was Black. Fire chief Black. And then you have a majority Black city council. And we've had this Black power structure for a long, long time. And we still have these issues that date back to the 60s. And there were a lot of comparisons when the April riots took place of the 68 riots following the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. And in 5 decades, it seems that the ball has not really moved. And for the record, I commute through Gilmore Homes going to work. So I'm on that border of Southwest Baltimore and West Baltimore. So
you live in Pigtown?
No, I live in it's a neighborhood called Winchester. And it's different from Sandtown Winchester. In fact, I like to say Monroe Street kind of subdivides the neighborhoods. So we've had these issues and it seemed that nobody has really addressed it. Think about what happened in the last 20 years for us. We've had a couple of recessions. I would say two or three. You had a recession in the early 90s. You had the dot-com bubble burst around 2000. And then we had the Great Recession that we just came off of. Baltimore in particular has had an insane number of homicides, at least 300 a year. And sadly, we're about to see that again. The question I have looking at all of this, what did the adults not do that the young people are frustrated with? And
when you say adults, are you talking about the city's power structure or do you just mean like parents?
I'm specifically talking about the power structure of the elected leaders, some of whom have been in office for years. And why didn't they address this sooner? The great thing about the way this government is set up, one branch could hold the other branch accountable. We kind of see this on Capitol Hill, where the legislative branch is using whatever power it has under the Constitution to get the president's attention. a long way of saying going into this election year, whoever runs for office should probably focus on how to address these issues that have not seemed to move anywhere, either positively or negatively. It's like time stood still in these affected neighborhoods.
That is one of the arguments that the Black Lives Matter movement is saying is, have we really made any progress? Obviously, we have made progress, because if it was 35, 40 years ago, you and I would not be sitting here right now.
We would be in a similar room, only it would be in West Baltimore.
Yes, exactly. So there definitely have been strides made in the way African Americans and Black people being able to work, obviously integration. So I'm not really going to go into all of that. These things keep on happening. Like you mentioned, Amadou Diallo, and there's even Rodney King.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Garner, Sandra Bland,
Michael Brown,
Trayvon Martin. These things keep on happening. Nobody wants to have that tough conversation about race. And I think what is upsetting about it is that as Black people, it's something that we see every day and we do want to talk about it, but sometimes only in a way that doesn't make us look bad. Like, we never want to say, okay, well, you know, some of it's on us. We always want to look for somebody to blame.
You described something that I've been seeing for years, and it's mostly I see this in the older generation. My parents, they grew up during the Civil Rights era. My uncle, who's a pastor in D.C., he went to the March on Washington. There needs to be some type of balance of keeping history in mind, but at the same time, not being so beholden to history that we kind of start retreating backwards. What you just described, as far as saying, yes, we've made strides, yes, we need to do more, but at the same time, when it comes to African Americans, it's almost expected that we walk in a monolithic fashion. Everyone thinks the same. Everyone follows the same script. This is not expected of white people. It's not expected of Hispanics or Asians or any other ethnic group. It's as if you're born Black, you're expected to have the same political affiliation, the same political ideology, the same religious beliefs. God did not make us all the same. In fact, the story about the Tower of Babel, that's it right there. God created diversity. There are issues and there is a culture that we share. There are experiences that we share. And I believe that we as Black people, we want the same thing, but we can't necessarily agree on how to get there.
Do you feel like as a Black reporter reporting in Baltimore and coming up in your career in D.C. and Annapolis and stuff like that, do you feel like the work that you do is your way of saying, I am not what you want me to be?
In my reporting, I try to have a global view that is not just what I see driving the 15 miles from my 15 miles. Flashback. Not driving the 15 minutes from my house to Charles Village, where WYPR is based. But what am I seeing in newspapers, on television, on radio, online? I don't know if you ever heard me say this, but at the end of the day, I have to answer through my work, basically tell people why they should care. Why should I care about Freddie Gray? And for that, I say, when he was a human being who died under questionable circumstances that, according to prosecutors, six police officers did not do their job and they were reckless. I'm also mindful that there's two sides to every story. So the other side says the officers did their job in arresting him and he hurt himself. What happens now is a matter of law and what happens in the court. So now, as far as reporting that story, I'm finding myself explaining the process of what's going on, the pretrial motions, how the jury's picked, and then what happens in the trial. And that's the other thing that I also try to keep in mind. I could rattle off acronyms and technical jargon as the days are long and know what it means, but not everyone who listens to me knows what that means. So that's how I go about it. Some people expect me to be the Black reporter.
Can you tell me about a time that happened that it like made you uncomfortable?
It's not that I was uncomfortable. It was more of, how do I explain this so I don't make any enemies? Even with the Black journalism or journalism in general, you still have to follow a set of rules and a set of ethics. What I've always tried to do is, whenever, especially when people are involved, I keep that in mind, that there's people involved, this is their story. This is what they're trying to say. I don't try to put words in their mouth. I don't try to do any of that stuff. I say, this is what they're saying, and let the quote play.
These are the facts.
These are the facts, and this is what someone says, and this is what they believe.
You don't try to report from any type of angle other than, I'm here to get the facts and report them back to you in a manner that you can understand.
Right. And really, that's what every reporter should do, no matter what race you are. It's probably a tough thing to hear or a tough thing to say in the current climate where people watch news channels based on their ideology.
If you're a journalist, no matter how easy it might be to do, you don't want to pander to a certain demographic. Now, if the station that you work for has a slant, maybe you can't really help that. But as an individual and an individual that works in media, it is your job to be 100% objective. And as you said, it might be hard for some people to hear, or people who listen to you or listen to any radio or TV station, as much as they want someone, a person of color or someone that looks like them, to, you know, champion one line of thinking or ideology, like that's just not how it is. Or that's not how it should be.
That's not how it should be. And I have a mantra. Not everything that's black is good for you.
Oh, my. Ooh, Kenneth. You're going to start some stuff.
Disclaimer, for about a 3 or 4 year period, I was a commentator. And once I realized that I can't have an honest discussion as a commentator, I said, bump that. I'm going to go back to reporting and let the facts speak for themselves.
When were you a commentator?
This was between late 2006 and 2010. I had my own blog, Maryland Politics Today. So anyone who's listening, yeah, that was me. I also wrote a column for Politico Maryland, which was a spinoff of Politicker in New York, New Jersey, which, remember, we were talking about the recession in 2008. That was one of the victims. But no, I have this mantra that not everything that's black is good for you. And keep in mind, we're talking about media. So you have to be careful with stereotypes, obviously, and what you put out there, and even with social media. And I wish people would keep that in mind no matter what, because some of this stuff you see on Facebook, I tell you. But I'm thinking of like the BET Awards. The BET Awards is entertaining from a comedic perspective because it's real easy to tell all types of jokes. But I remember the first time I saw the BET Awards in 2009. This was after Michael Jackson died. It was really sloppy. I was honestly kind of disappointed. I'm also looking at hip hop today. I could safely say I have not listened to hip hop on a regular basis since the year 2000, with the exception of a couple. Outkast Speaker Box Love Below, that's a good one, and Jay-Z's Death of Auto-Tune.
Well, okay, I am like a self-proclaimed, I love hip-hop. I gotta come to the defense in them. It's like radio is way different than
let's not even talk about the radio edit stuff, because
don't mean that. I'm just saying, like, yeah, the things on the radio are much different than the things that you can find from independent labels or like more underground stuff. But what were you gonna say?
Well, what I was going to say is, when I was growing up, you had Biggie and had Tupac and Bone Thugs and Harmony, and I'm not going to sit here and pretend that they were holier than thou. They were very much profane for my day, but there was a method and a message to their madness. Did you see Straight Outta Compton?
No, I actually haven't seen it. Was it any good?
Go see that movie. I don't know what I can and can't say on this podcast, but the song Fuck the Police, according to the movie, that was based on being harassed outside the studio when they were recording the album. Cube wrote, I can't remember, it's, I think it was Cube, but either way, they wrote the song. And you really understood where that song came from. But I listen to hip hop today, and it's like, what's the message? I'm bigger, I'm badder.
It's all braggadocio.
And there was braggadocio back in the day, but it seems to be profane for the sake of being profane, because they can be profane.
What advice do you have for aspiring journalists and reporters?
How long do we have? Well, number one, if you're about to go to college and you want to major in journalism, do not major in journalism. Do not major in mass media. Do not major in mass communications, because journalism, and especially if you're going to the school where it's a screen major, don't major in it, because when you get down to it, journalism is who, what, when, where, why, and how to best explain what happened, or how to tell people about the person you're doing a story on. major in history, major in political science, major in economics, major in something that will give you a global perspective.
Can you major in English? Because that's what I did.
Yes, major in English.
Okay, I'm vindicated. I am vindicated.
Yes. Yes, major in English. Major in something that will give you a worldview, because more than anything, you have to explain how does this small part of the globe fit into other people's lives. And having a global perspective and a global view is very important if you're a reporter. The other advice I should give is listen. I can't give any more of a simple step than to listen, because listening will help you and help inform you better, and will help you keep track of what's being thrown at you. But other than that, that's the main thing. Just have a global view with eyes wide open and just listen to the world around you, and don't just write to write, or don't just talk to talk. Have a point, because nothing will upset people more than wasting 60 seconds. Well, it used to be 60 seconds before I went into public radio. But the moment of time that someone has your attention, make it worthwhile. That's in addition to telling the truth and being honest and upright. And when someone says off the record, it's off the record. Unless it's on the record. And let me try that again. Just honoring your word. Because the one thing that journalists have is their credibility. And if you don't have that,
you don't have anything.
You don't have anything.
I want to thank Kenneth for sitting down with me today. You can hear him most days on Baltimore's NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR. You can also follow him on Twitter, @PKBNews. Follow Local Color on Twitter, @LocalColor410. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/LocalColorABP. And the Instagram is forthcoming. I'm still working on it. See you guys next time.